was Miles Davis, All Blues, from the Kind of Blue at 50 album. I believe it was Columbia Quarantine, High Fidel. I don't know, maybe that's just the quality, but you are listening to WEFT 90.1 FM. This is the 6 p.m., just the top of the hour. This is the program Where We Are At. My name is Ben. Today, I am in the studio doing this show live. It's great to be back in here. The date is June 14th, 2021. Right now, I'm looking at the temperature. It's dips down into about 83 degrees. It was pretty warm today. It's summer's here, folks. So if you're able to stay cool, stay hydrated and stay somewhere where there's air conditioning, I would highly advise that you do so, because it's going to be a pretty hot week. Tomorrow is going to get about 84 degrees, and then Wednesday will be about 83. Thursday it could get up all the way up to 90 degrees, and then Friday won't be any better. In fact, it'll be even more, according to what I'm looking at here in the Champaign-Urbana area. Friday will be 96, and then if you really want to look forward to the weekend, it'll be about mid-80s, so it's going to be hot. It's summer here. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Usually what we do here. Last week there was the Illinois Commerce Commission, which is in charge of a lot of what happens with utilities, things such as, water, electricity, services, and they're kind of the board that is sort of in charge of how those are operated here in the state of Illinois. Had another their usual meeting, public meeting that they have every other week. I guess you would say fortnight. That's once every 2 weeks. And I have a comment that was made by a certain someone that you may know if you are a usual listener to my show, by Alan Max Axelrod. He is an activist. He is the campaign lead of a grassroots program called No Ameren Shutoffs. It started, I believe we're getting to the point where it started about a year ago, but they got four utility shutoffs here in the state of Illinois. But you'll hear everything. You'll hear everything that I've said from Alan Max Axelrod. This is his public comment that he gave at last Thursday's ICC. Public meeting. I'm queuing up the audio, so you should be hearing what you're about to hear is Alan Max Axelrod's public comment at the ICC public meeting from last Thursday.
First, Mr. Alan Max Axelrod, are you on? State and spell your name, and then we will begin the timer.
My name is Alan Max Axelrod, A-L-L-A-N-M-A-X. A-X-E-L-R-O-D. I'm the campaign lead of No Ameren Shutoffs, a $0 all-volunteer coalition of 48 member organizations and counting, spanning the state of Illinois, north and south, east and west. We've won 4 utility shutoff moratoria, and you've heard from us a lot. This is going to be more of a personal comment today, because one of the things that may not have been explicitly stated is we know the political ecosystem that you are in. We know that some of you, or rather all of you, signed an open letter back in September of last year, showing that you clearly understood the need to advocate. And so the reasonable assumption is then that there are systemic pressures that, whether they are professional or political, mean that you fear the sacrifice of speaking. So allow me to illustrate why I cannot empathize with that by outlining just some of the sacrifices that I have made. I've endured professional retaliation before. It's possible to outmaneuver. During the Graduate Employees Organization strike in 2018 at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, my advisor tried to retaliate against me by saying I was withholding research labor. I was able to outmaneuver that because I was not withholding my research labor, and I stuck to the receipts. I endured retaliation when I was a county employee at the Champaign County Treasurer's Office during the pandemic, before my health insurance kicked in, to do right by other people when it comes to their rights in the workplace. Why have you not sacrificed? I have sacrificed my health during this. I even was reported on being in the hospital with a hernia in large connection due to the trauma that this has been causing me. What have you sacrificed? I had been targeted by my state representative and my township supervisor during this. What have you sacrificed? Amongst all the things that we have been telling you, what factual errors were there? The answer is, there were none. When you look at your loved ones and you think to yourselves, you are good people, there are receipts, frankly, to the contrary. And that can change. We haven't been asking you to spend more money. We've been asking you to speak. Legitimize the suffering of all the folks who have been shut off during this pandemic and continue to be shut off. Thank you.
And again, that was Alan Max Axelrod's public comment from this last Thursday's Illinois Commerce Commission public meeting. Now, given that the moratorium on utility shutoffs has expired. For those who don't know what that is, that's when people who are behind on their payments, on their bills for things such as water and electricity, and boy, is there a time to really need those right now in this summer heat. If you are in need of assistance, there's a few phone numbers you can call for assistance. There is the LIHEAP number. Now, I'm not sure if this number is still in service or their services are still available. And I know there was approved funding, I believe, for people on forgiving. Late fees, late due fees for utilities. But look, I want to be helpful as I can with this program. That's why I'm doing this show. So the number for the LIHEAP, and that's Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program, that phone number is 1-866-674-6327. Again, that phone number for the LIHEAP, and that's Low Income Home Energy Assistance Program. The phone number is 1-866-674-6327. And you could now, if not able to get an answer from that number, if their services are no longer available, hopefully you can call the Illinois Commerce Commission directly. Again, during business hours, I believe they open at 8, regular business hours. So starting around 8:30 a.m., probably all the way through 3 p.m., 4 p.m., usual business hours. But the phone number for the Illinois Commerce Commission is 800-524-0795. And again, if you need this phone number for the Illinois Commerce Commission, it's 800-524-0795. And you can also go to the Illinois Commerce Commission website, if you would like that. And the URL is www.icc.illinois, so www.icc.illinois.gov, G-O-V. So www.icc.illinois.gov. And let's see, I got some public service. I know I usually wait until about halfway through the show with public service announcements, but the program that I'm planning on playing is going to be the whole rest of the hour, so I figured it better just get the public service announcements out of the way, so I don't have to, you know, stop the program halfway through and kind of, you know, mess that up, you know, just play it by, you know, play it all the way through, or as much, because I probably won't be able to play the whole full program. Anyways, here are some public service announcements. Please consider supporting the programming you love. WEFT will gladly accept that vehicle you've been looking to get rid of. Our vehicle donation program provides an effortless option to support WEFT Community Radio. You can give CARS, cars, charitable adult rides and services, a call at 1-855-500-RIDE. So that's 1-855-500-500-500-RIDE. 1-855-500-RIDE. Sorry if I, you know, had too much redundancy there. You can also fill out the secure donation form at careasy.org. That's careasy, careasy.org. Just remember to designate WEFT as the nonprofit beneficiary of your gift. WEFT truly appreciates supporters like you. There is also, let's see, I'm checking the date. Making sure this is there's the 2021 Boneyard Arts Festival. Presented annually every spring by 40 North, 88 West, the 2021 Boneyard Arts Festival is a 3-day event showcasing the broad range of creative activity flourishing in our community. Its goal is to bring together local artists, businesses, and organizations for a special event showcasing the art of Champaign County. The Boneyard is a unique countywide celebration that takes place in a wide variety of venues from Friday, June 18th through Sunday, June 20th. Check out the details at 40north.org programs Boneyard. So it's 40 North, and so 40 North, all one, NORTH .org programs, and then go to Boneyard for more information, and be sure to visit the display in the window here at WEFT. We're located at 113 North Market Street in downtown Champaign. And if you would like, speaking since we, you know, I'm giving out the, you know, our address, and if you would like to donate to WEFT, we would certainly appreciate your financial support and welcome it. You can send, you know, you can mail it to us. Our address would be, you would write down when you were, for your mailing address that you're forwarding your financial donation to, you would write down WEFT 90.1 FM, P.O. Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois, Champaign, Illinois, zip code 61824-1223. You could also go to our website, www.weft.org, where you can also listen to us online if you prefer that, if you prefer listening to radio online. You could also give us a call and give your financial support that way. Our phone number, if you would like to dial, is 217-359-9338. Again, that phone number for WEFT is 217 359-9338. And I guess if you, again, want to come down in person to give your support in person, hopefully there'll be somebody here to take your donation. Our address is 113 North Market Street, downtown Champaign. Just go down that very narrow street, that very narrow Market Street. And you would be on the left because it's a one way. You're going, and it would be on your left. Let's see. I think that's in terms of housekeeping. We're pretty good. It's about 6:15. Let's see. Oh, just a reminder in case if I forget, because after I play this programming I'm about to play is called Let's Talk About Race. And the reason why I'm playing that is because Juneteenth is coming up. I believe that is this Saturday. I believe that will be celebrated this Saturday because it's on Juneteenth is on the 18th of June. Not the 18th, the 19th. It will be Juneteenth will be on Saturday, June 19th. For those who don't know what Juneteenth is, it's the oldest nationally celebrated commemoration of the ending of slavery in the United States. And just a little background on some history, to go a little bit more detail, I'm actually opening up an article. I hope it doesn't play any. Let me turn down. When the Union Army, here's some of the historic background on Juneteenth. When the Union Army finally arrived in 1865, General Granger's official announcement was met with great jubilation throughout the black community. At the time, around 250,000 people were slaves in Texas, and that celebration has been passed down through generations for more than a century. So 250,000 people, this was 250,000 slaves in the state of Texas. If I may summarize it shortly, because this article that I'm reading from the Courier General, don't get me wrong, I'm sure it's a very good article, but I had read the open, written by Kirby Adams, Louisville Courier Journal. It was published the Juneteenth of last year, June 19th, 2020. Kirby Adams, KIRBYADAMS. I just want to give credit to the journalist, a reporter who wrote this for the Louisville Courier Journal. General Gordon Granger, he was the Union Major General, arrived on the island of Galveston, Texas, to take command of more than 2,000 federal troops recently landed in the Department of Texas to enforce the emancipation of the slave of its slaves and oversee a peaceful transition of power. That's kind of what it is in short. I would highly, if you would like, take more about it. Hopefully there will be an event this weekend somewhere around Champaign. Hopefully you can ask your friends if you would like, read some of the history, because this is a holiday. This is a day that's hasn't really been recognized until the past couple of years, where it's getting more. People have been talking about it more, and it's getting more notoriety and more recognition. And the reason why it's called Juneteenth is it's the combination of June and 19th in honor of the date of Granger's announcement. And it first appeared around 1903. It's also known as African American Freedom Day or Emancipation Day. And I believe it's observed in 45 states. This is from what I'm reading from Google. So, but I do have. Sorry, I'm queuing up some audio here that I'm about to play. The program is called "Let's Talk About Race." Also, before I because this is probably going to last. It's 6:20, so this will probably play all the way to the end of the show. First off, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. Just a reminder, I believe the Champaign City Council meetings are now back to how they usually are. I believe you can go to them in person. I'm not sure about the Urbana City Council meetings, which, as I have stated before in previous shows, those are at 7 p.m. Mondays. Go to Urbana City website if you would like. And you can, I believe, either whether or not they'll have a Zoom link, you could still be able to spectate, watch them, watch the meetings, learn, listen to them, which I think, me personally, it's always good to be informed at the local city level about what's going on in your local city, town. But Champaign, I believe, the Champaign City Council, I believe, are back to, if you can remember, back to things pre-COVID, how you could go to meetings in person. I believe those are being, those are open to the public at the usual Champaign City Building. I don't know the address, sorry, but at the top of my head right now. But and I also just wanted to say happy Pride. I am really kicking myself for not having a show last week to kind of celebrate Pride. But also that's something else that, you know, maybe you would like to do this, you know, as we're already in the middle of June. And hey, it's after being stuck inside and really social distance, you know, solitude for the last year with given the pandemic, maybe you want to go out and kind of celebrate something. So we have Pride. We have Juneteenth coming up. Again, that's June 19th, Saturday. So anyways, I'm going to stop talking because, one, I'm catching out of breath and probably going to need a good drink of water. But the program I am about to play right now is Let's Talk About Race. I don't know who is the producer or program runner of it, so I do apologize. Hopefully they mentioned that. But this is the program Let's Talk About Race. I think I have, let me make sure. Okay, I got the audio queued up now. So this is the program. Again, Let's Talk About Race.
Welcome to a special Juneteenth edition of Grassroot News. I'm your host and moderator, Lanita Duke. Just what is Juneteenth?
Juneteenth means to me progression, transition.
Juneteenth, a cross between June and 19, commemorates the official end of slavery in Texas on June 19th, 1865. That's over 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was signed into law by President Lincoln. News of their new freedoms was slow to reach some slaves throughout the country, and historians theorize that Texan slave owners suppressed the information in order to get one final cotton harvest from the slaves. On June 19th, 1865, Major General Gordon Granger and Union troops arrived in Galveston to announce the war had ended and delivered General Order No. 3, which proclaimed that all slaves were free. The first official Juneteenth celebration took place in Texas a year later and became a state holiday in 1980. Juneteenth is celebrated in many ways, ranging from parades to cookouts and other activities. But Juneteenth isn't just about celebrations. It also serves as a time to further the conversation on the legacy left by slavery in the United States and as a means of discussing ways to address it, like the hotly contested topic of reparations.
We recognize our lineage as a generational trust, as inheritance. And the real dilemma posed by reparations is just that, a dilemma of inheritance. It is impossible to imagine America without the inheritance of slavery.
First sponsored by John Conyers in 1989 and reintroduced every session until his retirement in 2017, the Commission to Study and Develop Reparation Proposals for African Americans Act tries to tackle the subject. The bill is now sponsored by Texas Democrat Sheila Jackson Lee in the House and Senator Cory Booker in the Senate.
Though I am gratified that we are having this hearing on Juneteenth, and for those of us who understand Juneteenth, 2 years after the proclamation, Emancipation Proclamation, there were those Africans who did not have freedom until 1865. H.R. 40 is in fact the response of the United States of America long overdue. Slavery is the original sin. Slavery has never received an apology. This commission would be comprised of members selected.
So enslavement built America, and the American Civil War was fought to keep slavery. This all started in 1619. History professor George Trent Vinson breaks it all down.
By 1619, 500,000 enslaved Africans had already made their way across the Atlantic, primarily to Brazil and Spanish colonies in South America and the Caribbean. So with that context, we see that slavery is not new, and we see that transatlantic slave trading is not new. That began in 1502. What is new about the 1619 Africans is that this is the beginning of a particular racialized slavery in what becomes English North America. For the 1619 Africans, what happens here is I think there's a realization that, oh, here we have a permanent labor force at our disposal. We don't have to release them after 4 to 7 years like they did the indentured servants. And in a labor-starved colony like Jamestown, I think people like Yardley and Piercy and other landholders see this as an opportunity. They don't necessarily speak the same language. The Africans are not, they don't share the similar cultural context. They have no home country of England to appeal to for rights to make claims of citizenship. And phenotypically, they look differently. They're easily marked out as a distinct labor class. And we see this in the labor categories of the early colony, where they're described as Negroes or servants not Christians, which was another way to describe them, to differentiate them in the records. So we have this combination of class and race coming together to create caste, a dynamic that presumes a permanent inferior group of people. And this is where we get the development of racial slavery. This is why Jamestown is so important for North American history. It's not that slavery was new, right? But it's this particular form of racial slavery that develops in what becomes America that creates that racial caste system and ideas, ideologies of white supremacy and black inferiority that continued over these 246 years of slavery and beyond. So the interesting dynamic of all of this, the result of all of this, is that by 1860, on the eve of the Civil War, America has 4 million enslaved people, which makes it the largest slave society in world history. And that began at Jamestown.
He happy because they've been here 200 years. Said, I'm just so thrilled to be here. Over here in America, I'm so glad y'all took me out of die, homie. I used to live to be 150. Now I die of high blood pressure by the time I'm 52. And that thrills me to death. I'm just so pleased America's gonna last. They brought me over here in a boat. There's 400 of us come over here. 360 of us died on the way over here. I love that. That just thrilled me so. I don't know, you white folks are just so good to us. Got over here, another 20 of us died from disease. but you didn't have no doctors to take care of us. I'm so sorry you didn't. Upset you all some too, didn't it? Then they split us all up. Yes, sir, we took my mom over that way, took my wife that way, took my kids over yonder. I'm just so happy. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do if I don't get 200 more years of this. Lord of mercy. Yes, sir, I don't know where my old mama is now. She up yonder in that big white folks in the sky. Y'all probably forgot about it. But I ain't gonna never forget it.
At the edge of Central Park in Manhattan, there's a bronze statue of a doctor named James Marion Sims, whose brilliant achievement carried the fame of American surgery throughout the entire world. He's the guy who created the vaginal speculum, an instrument gynecologists use for examination. He pioneered the surgical repair for fistula, a complication from childbirth, and became known as the father of modern gynecology. But that brilliant achievement was the result of a series of excruciating experimental surgeries that he conducted on enslaved women. In a lot of ways, Sims epitomizes the story of American medicine for Black women. It's a system that's failing them to this day. From infant mortality to life expectancy, the racial disparities in healthcare are staggering. The gulf between Black and white might be widest when we look at maternal mortality, with Black women 3 to 4 times more likely to die in connection with pregnancy or birth than white women. And that divide can be traced back to doctors like Sims, who contributed to a long, largely overlooked history of institutional racism in medicine.
Trying to understand a historical problem without knowing its history is like trying to treat a patient without eliciting a thorough medical history. You're doomed to failure.
That's Harriet Washington, a medical ethicist and author who chronicled the intersection of race and medicine in her book, Medical Apartheid. While many of the stark racial disparities in healthcare can be attributed to environmental and economic factors like access to good healthcare, studies show that minority patients tend to receive a lower quality of care than non-minorities, even when they have the same types of health insurance or the same ability to pay for care.
As African Americans, we've been abused for so long, consistently by the system. Why should we trust it? Why should we go to one ill? And that's iatrophobia. That's a fear of the healer. You know, inculcated by the behavior of those healers, unfortunately.
It starts with slavery. Doctors relied on slave owners for financial stability. They accompanied plantation masters to auctions to verify the fitness of slaves and were called in to treat sick slaves to protect their owners' investments. In 1807, Congress abolished the importation of slaves and in turn pushed Black women to have more children, to essentially breed slaves. Founding Father Thomas Jefferson later wrote, "I consider a woman who brings a child every 2 years as more profitable than the best man on the farm." Around the 1830s, the abolitionist movement led to the rise of what was called Negro medicine, or efforts to identify Black inferiority to justify slavery. And there were polygenists who tried to use both science and the Bible to find proof that races evolved from different origins. The 1830s also marked the beginning of recorded experimentation on Black women's bodies. One doctor performed experimental C-sections on slaves. Another one perfected the dangerous ovariotomy, or removal of an ovary, by testing the procedure on slave women. In fact, half the original articles in the 1836 Southern Medical and Surgical Journal dealt with experiments on Black people. And then, of course, there was James Marion Sims, whose reputation is etched in history and on that statue in Central Park. Between 1845 and 1849, Sims began performing experimental surgeries on a 17-year-old slave named Anarka. He eventually performed 30 operations on Anarka and more surgeries on about 11 other female slaves. When his male colleagues could no longer bear to assist him in inflicting pain on the women, the slaves took turns restraining one another. Yet paintings depicting Sims, Anarka, and other slave women presented a subdued version of his experiments. Even though anesthesia was introduced in 1846, Sims chose not to use it for his experimentation with slaves. His practices echoed one of the most prevalent and dangerous beliefs in medicine at the time, that Black people did not feel pain or anxiety. This book from 1851, titled The Natural History of Human Species, claimed the American dark races bear with indifference tortures insupportable to a white man. Studies released as recently as last year demonstrate that Black people are less likely to be treated for pain, particularly in the ER. There's even one from a children's hospital that found the same to be true for kids. And just this year, Pearson Education, a leading educational publisher, issued an apology and recalled nursing textbooks that included racist stereotypes, like this section that said Black people often report higher pain intensity than other cultures.
Well, what does it mean when you say that someone doesn't feel pain? Among other things, you're speaking about their humanity. These are all part of that suite of beliefs emanating from the 19th century that we still have not shaken off. despite all our knowledge and sophistication. They're deeply ingrained.
Doctors like Sims might fit the Dr. Frankenstein stereotype, but they weren't outliers. Historically, Southern doctors who used black bodies for troubling experiments were the norm.
It's a very common question. How can we judge our forebears? You know, those guys in the 18th century who practiced medicine in a way that appalls us today. You know, we think, how could you do that? I did not judge the practitioners based on our own ethics. I judged them based on the ethics of their time. It was not acceptable back then. We just did not hear from the people who protested against it.
After the Civil War ended, the 1900s brought a wave of immigrants to the U.S. It sparked a race panic and coincided with the birth of the American eugenics movement. One of the movement's key objectives was to reduce the childbearing potential of the poor and disabled. Leaders included birth control pioneer and Planned Parenthood founder Margaret Sanger, who eventually devised the controversial Negro Project, or family planning centers that pushed birth control in the Black South. It was a project that even garnered support from W.E.B. Du Bois, a founder of the NAACP, who wrote that black people bred carelessly and disastrously. By the mid-1930s, more than half the states passed pro-sterilization laws. And often, sterilization was forced. In 1961, future civil rights leader Fannie Lou Hamer went to the hospital to have a tumor removed, but was subjected to a hysterectomy without consent. The procedure, which rendered women infertile without their knowledge, was so common in the South that Hamer is said to have dubbed it the Mississippi appendectomy.
African-American babies were no longer economically valuable. And African-Americans themselves had gone from being a resource to a nuisance.
In June of 1973, the SPLC uncovered 100 to 150,000 cases of women who had been sterilized with federal funds in Alabama. Half the women were black. In recent decades, women of color continue to be exposed to dubious reproductive health programs. In December 1990, the FDA approved a contraceptive called Norplant, and it was selectively marketed to black teenagers in Baltimore schools.
You know, one of the current birth control methods now in the United States is Norplant.
Norplant fans like David Duke, the former KKK Grand Wizard, even introduced legislation to give women on welfare an annual reward of $100 if they agreed to get Norplant.
And it's time we start to encourage welfare mothers to be responsible.
That bill never passed, but the implant ignited a debate on whether long-term contraception, like Norplant that lasted 5 years, could be used as a form of social engineering when pushed to specific communities. Today, as we continue to lose black mothers at alarming rates, a deeper look at the past may be a good step towards creating a more equitable healthcare system.
If you're just joining us, this is a Grassroots News special on the holiday, Juneteenth. Now, you just heard from Richard Pryor, Bicentennial Nigga, and a Vox News piece on how the bodies of enslaved black women advance medicine. Now, the labors of enslaved men and women also advance early capitalism in America.
The New York Times 1619 Project, which is spotlighting parts of history that are less well known. We are going to focus on some of the economic legacies, including the larger connections with modern capitalism. Specifically, we're going to look at how the production of American sugar, known as white gold, helped to fuel slavery and became ingrained in our society. Historian Khalil Gibran Muhammad of Harvard's Kennedy School wrote about that for the New York Times. Louisiana, he wrote, led the nation in destroying the lives of black people in the name of economic efficiency. And he joins me now. Professor Muhammad, thank you very much for being here. Help us understand how sugar is connected to the origins of American slavery.
Sugar was the most dominant economic incentive for European colonization of the Americas. No other crop was as abundant or successful in drawing Europeans to these shores, and I mean by that North America and South America, for the purpose of cultivating sugar for a worldwide market, and particularly for Europe that had already established a taste for sugar, but would grow exponentially in terms of demand over time. There's no way to really understand the significance of the colonization of the Americas without understanding the role of sugar in it.
and how and explain how slavery played such an important role from the very beginning.
Sure. So the origin story, of course, is that Christopher Columbus brings some cane stalks with him by way of the Spanish Canary Islands in 1493. So sugar is already part of the globe, but it has not become the commodity in bulk form that it will become once Christopher Columbus brings it to the New World. As such, sugar was always an incredibly difficult product to produce. First, the cane itself is heavy and unwieldy.
Right.
And secondly, to take the plant and turn it into sugar required incredible labor and often dangerous and difficult labor.
And you write about how, of course, that began in the 1600s, but then it went on literally for hundreds of years. It changed shape. You get closer to the Civil War, and the shape of the sugar industry has changed, but still slaves are an essential piece of it.
Absolutely. So Louisiana doesn't get into the business of sugarcane cultivation until the end of the 18th century. As a result of the attempt to cultivate sugar, it blossomed and bloomed. And by the top of the 19th century, Louisiana was producing about a quarter of the world's cane sugar supply. It was a pretty miraculous turnaround. But all of that was made possible by the enslavement of people of African descent.
And I know I'm asking you to skip over a lot of history here, but you move forward to today, to the 20th and even into the 21st century, and you write about how the legacy of what happened in Louisiana and other places still plays a role in the economy. A vital role in the economy of this country.
Well, if we go from sugar to cotton, we basically explain two crops that in their totality explain much of the infrastructure of our capitalist economy to this day. We can explain everything from the abundance of land that was originally held by the indigenous and the labor of enslaved people as America's competitive advantage. By the 19th century, cotton, for example, was essentially the major export of the United States. And that cotton export helped make possible the wealth not only in enslaved people, but also the wealth of banks in the North that were responsible for financing investments in this country that were often mortgaged on the basis of enslaved people. There's no way to really understand the economic might of America by the 19th century without understanding the role of cotton slavery and earlier sugar slavery in it.
They're one of the other writers for these series of articles in the Sunday New York Times. Matthew Desmond, he's a professor at Princeton, writes about how not only that today's economy has its roots in slavery, but that modern American capitalism is as severe as it is in its treatment of people, and that too has its roots in slavery. Some people are going to look at that and say, is that a leap too far? How do you answer that?
Well, it's a good question, and I can see why people would give pause. But if we take a step back and we really ask a fair question, we could ask ourselves, has our economy been built on the notion of personhood or profit? And in that sense, from slavery to the late 19th century of immigration of Europeans from around the world to the 20th century today, people have been ground up in our economy for the purpose of money making. How else would you explain the great labor unrest of the late 19th and early 20th century that brought us essentially our modern social welfare system, eventually in the New Deal, but for the fact that capitalism created misery for people at the lowest end of the economic totem pole. That's our history, whether we like it or not. Some people prospered in that system, but it was a system that was often quite brutal to workers who were responsible for doing the heavy lifting of our economy.
Finally, why is it important, Professor Muhammad, that Americans understand what you've written about?
Well, it's important because we don't treat our past with the same commitment to truth and honesty and accuracy as we do, say, science and technology. If there's a concern in this day and age about the questioning global warming or climate change, if scientists are under attack for making things up, That's a new phenomenon, a product of our late 20th century. But we've been having culture wars about how to interpret the American past from the very beginning. And the consequences of that are what drove the editors of the 1619 Project to look closely at the work of academic historians, just like many people look at the work of scientists and say, what do academic historians tell us about the past that we have not been teaching and we've not learned as well as we should?
Khalil Gibran Muhammad, he's a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School, one of the writers for this New York Times series, The 1619 Project, looking at the 400th anniversary of the beginning of slavery.
Wading in the water, wading in the water.
Wading in the water, wading in the water, children. Wading in the water, God's gonna trouble these waters. Wading in the water, wading in the water, children. Wading in the water, God's gonna trouble these waters.
See that band all dressed in white.
God's gonna trouble these waters.
It looked like a band of the Israelites.
Welcome back to our special on Juneteenth. My name's Lenita Duke from Grassroots News. This is sort of a journalistic roundtable, sort of explaining what Juneteenth is, the antecedent
for Juneteenth and where we stand as a nation, as the enslaved people of America stand up.
Where is she?
Come on back, peaceful.
Easy now.
I'm gonna be free or die.
I've been walking with my face turned to the sun. Weight on my shoulders, a bullet in my gun. Oh, I got eyes in the back of my head, just in case I have to run. I do what I can when I can while I can for my people, while the clouds roll back and the stars fill the night. That's when I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on. I can feel it in my bones.
You have made it 100 miles to freedom. Would you like to pick a new name to mark your freedom?
Paratum.
Early in the morning, before the sun begins to shine, we're gonna start moving towards that separating line. I'm waiting through muddy waters. You know I got a made of mine, and I don't mind if I lose any blood on the way to salvation, and I'll fight with the strength that I got until I die. So I'm gonna stand up, take my people with me. Together we are going to a brand new home, far across the river. Can you hear freedom calling, calling me to answer? Gonna keep on keeping on.
Harriet, welcome to the Underground Railroad.
I'm actually just going to end the program there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Just a reminder that, as I said, the Urbana City Council will be having their usual Monday night meeting. And that will be just right after my show, at the end of my show at 7 p.m. That will be, and you can go to urbanaillinois.us, all one word, the URL. Excuse me. urbanaillinois.us. And I believe if you go click on the agenda, so you would click. So city council, okay, there is a city council, there's both a committee meeting and I guess, maybe it's actually going on this. Okay. Today's the 14th. I guess it's going on right now, or it started an hour ago, but you can click on the agenda. And if you go that URL, I'm going to just start wrapping this up here. Urbanaillinois.us if you live in Urbana or you're interested in the City of Urbana Council and what they do. And tomorrow, the Champaign City Council, I believe they are having their regular open meeting, so you can go to the meetings. And by the way, the City Council in Champaign, I looked it up during as I was playing that program. 102 North Neal Street, if you would like to go and watch the City Council. That's the Champaign City Building. Not too far from here, actually, 102 North Neal Street. And you can go to champaignillinois.gov, champaignil.gov, and you can look at the agenda and see what's on what's going on there. I'm going to prepare. I am a little bit sloppy. You see, this is what happens when you don't do a live show. You get sloppy and you forget how things work. I'm going to prepare my music that I'm going to play out with. It is Cab Calloway, Scatman Crothers. And just want to let you all end this program. Thank you very much for listening, and happy Pride. And remember that this Saturday is Juneteenth. One more thing. There is going to be a Juneteenth celebration in Champaign at West Side Park, and I believe the time is 12 p.m. West Side Park will be celebrating Juneteenth Saturday at 12 p.m. Champaign, West Side Park, Champaign, 12 p.m. Juneteenth celebration. If you're interested and would like to check that out. So thank you very much for listening. Cab Calloway, and Scatman Crothers. You've got your troubles. I'm gonna play. It's reading the CD, and let's get some music going on. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good night. You're listening to stay tuned for more programming here on WFT 90.1 FM radio. Have a good night.
Was a choice.
I see that worried look upon your face. You've got your troubles. I've got mine. She's found somebody else to take your place. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. I too have lost my love today. All of my dreams have flown away. Now just like you, I sit and wonder why. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. You need some sympathy, well, so do I. You've got your troubles, I've got mine. Got mine. You need some sympathy, well.
Good evening and welcome to